Welcome to You Can't Pick Your Friend's Nose. Let's do this.
Oh, hey.
Holla.
Look at you with your sun-kissed Florida skin.
Oh, look at me. All fancy pants.
Look at you.
With those fur coats and pointy hats. Homer, those are elk. I still hate them. Have you seen that, Simpsons?
No, I'm not. I'm not much of a Simpsons. Like, it just wasn't part of my history. I need to somehow get a crash course on all the good Simpsons things at some point.
Now I feel like we just need to turn this whole thing off. I'm just so depressed
right now. You log off and make your own podcast, and I'll make my own podcast, and we'll just, you know.
And then we'll combine them together and just to see what
happens. Just see what happens.
Talking over each other the whole time. Dude, you should have recorded a podcast while I'm gone.
I know.
While I was gone.
I know.
You probably had all the time in the world.
Welcome to You Can't Pick Your Friend's Nose. It's been a hiatus.
Yeah.
We apologize, but not really.
Don't hate us.
We're not really asking for forgiveness because we've been living our life. And
yeah. Living large.
And I'm Jordan.
And I'm Darren.
And this is a podcast where two dads talk about weird facts, give advice without being asked, and share our opinions on everything and anything and everything and everything and everything and anything. And
sounds like
Darren just got back from the Florida Keys. Not quite, but tell us about your vacay, bro.
Dude, so yeah, it was legit. We went to Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
A city that's not Miami, like the song we were just singing before we came on.
That classic.
Yeah, we flew in. It was on a Tuesday. We got in late, about midnight. Uh-huh. And I'm going to give you a play-by-play of the whole week.
In 30 seconds.
Just kidding.
Go.
In 30 seconds. So, yeah, got in. Rental car was off-site, so we had to wait 2 hours for a shuttle that supposedly ran every 15 minutes, which was pretty annoying that it didn't run. Got to the it was kind of like an Airbnb, but it was a resort, mm-hmm. and it was like a condo. It was super nice.
Yeah.
And good priced. And so we hit the beach. We hit Kennedy Space Center. We hit the Universal Studios. We hit Disney World, Magic Kingdom. And we hit a baseball game, Major League Baseball
game.
That's
awesome.
It was pretty legit. So I disconnected and wasn't on my phone very much.
Yeah.
To be honest. And it felt good.
Yeah, and simultaneously in my world, my wife was on a two-week vacation around the world. And I was a single dad for 2 weeks. And so Darren and I just couldn't be bothered to talk with any of you. And we, you know, but here we are. So say thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Well, I wasn't telling you to thank me. I was just telling
the
world to thank us.
Yeah, thank us, world.
Everybody, press.
Thank us.
Everybody,
for who
press
we are.
Pause and audibly say thank you, and then press play again.
We'll wait.
Well,
oh, we're back.
We're back.
Thank you for that. Thank
you've
you.
Been storing up, you know, a couple of facts. I know, chewing on them while you've been away, and you've presented one with, you know, you're excited about this one today.
Yeah, this one was actually I have a couple of them, but this
one we're
gonna
do two. Why not?
Yeah, this one we're gonna do. It's more of a pop culture type thing. So here goes. It says strange people have been collecting strange things forever, and the example is the first thing sold on eBay was a laser pointer that was broken. Pierre Omidyarri, whatever his last mm-hmm. name is, one of the owners of eBay, set it up for auction to test out the system. He told the guy who bought it, because it was broken, that he'd take it back. The buyer wanted to keep it. He told Pierre that he collected broken laser pointers. That was in 1995. Do you remember when eBay came out?
I mean, I have no memory of eBay in 1995, but I think early in my adolescence, I recall eBay, like the concept of, hey, you can just search here and people are just selling their crap and you can buy stuff.
Do you want to hear a hot take or first hear?
Well,
I have never bought anything on
really,
eBay.
No kidding.
Not one thing.
So I will say eBay tends to be, you know, for like, you know, collectibles or things that you don't mind buying used. Like I think that eBay for had its moment, and then Amazon just quickly became, it's like a much more trusted thing. Like if I want to buy, let's say I want to buy a book or a you know, some kind of game, like a, I don't know, like a sealed board game, right? There was like more trust in going to Amazon and getting it because you just, they weren't selling used stuff. They were selling new stuff.
Yeah.
And then.
And not only that, they have the A to Z return.
Exactly. Whatever. So with eBay, you're like, I don't know whose basement I'm buying whatever I'm buying from. And some people are fine with that because you got a great deal. I buy and sell things on eBay all the time.
Random stuff, right? That you can't find on Amazon or anywhere else. That's just there. I mean, it definitely has its purpose, I guess. I just have never been one to buy.
Let me pull up my eBay. I have gotten 472 individual pieces of feedback on eBay as a buyer and a seller.
Holy cow.
I have 472 pieces of feedback, all positive. Perfect 5-star rating on eBay.
Ooh.
I'm not here to brag, but I guess I just did. You know, I'm.
Dude, I feel honored
and embarrassed
and not worthy and impressed to be in your presence.
Thank you. Would you like to?
In your presence, meaning?
Would you like to buy something off eBay?
Make a donation. Buy something. What do you got for sale right now?
Nothing. All my auctions are done. I sold some baseball cards. I sold some sneakers. And here I am, just a free man, no listings. I can't believe the guy wanted. So let's just like rewind, because collecting broken laser pointers. I mean, let's just chew on that for a minute.
That's very specific. That's very specific.
It's too specific, right?
Like, I guess it would get even more specific if he was like this brand of broken laser pointers. I mean, the fact that it's broken laser pointers. And I'm sure there's not that many brands out there of laser pointers, especially in 1995.
Oh yeah, it feels like, feels like the first chapter of a Stephen King novel, where it's like setting up this guy as the serial killer, but the way that he's described is like, oh hey, I'm Peter, I collect broken laser pointers, you know?
Yeah,
it's kind of freaky.
So do you collect anything?
Oh yeah, you know I do.
Oh, I know you do. I just wanted to ask it so everybody else can know.
I've got
it
a whole
slew of broken laser pointers.
I've got a box under my bed full of broken laser pointers. I know. I've always been a collector my whole life. I collect little trinkets here and there. I collect sneakers. I collect books. I collect baseball cards, sports memorabilia stuff. I feel like most of my individual like play money goes to just fun things that I collect. So
where do you get that from?
You know, what's funny, and actually, so I'll go into this. It's not a tangent because it's related, but it's just funny because I was talking to another friend about this. I went through this period of time when I like went into my career initially, where I kind of thought I had to be like really buttoned up, like serious business guy. And I realize now, looking back, that I took myself way too seriously, you know. And I was like,
"Well, explain. Like, what was that buttoned up too tight? What would you do that was so uptight?"
Well, yeah. What I'm getting at is like I kind of paused all hobbies because things seemed like too juvenile, maybe, or you know. And I was wearing like I overdressed for work for a lot of years. Which is like not always a bad thing, but like I now realize that I was doing it out of like, I really wanted to be like the buttoned up, you know, like, oh, I'm a professional now, right?
Were you that guy that wore the suit and tie?
I wouldn't wear a tie, but like I would dress up like way nicer than I needed.
Dressy
than
shirt.
I needed to
dress. Long sleeve
shirt.
Yeah,
like a button up shirt. And
oh, dude.
Like to a,
you're that guy.
To a job that didn't need it. I didn't need to be wearing this.
Yeah.
Right? So. I think what happened is somewhere along the way, I took myself less seriously and I just decided like, hey, look, like not everything is that serious. And what happened was I kind of turned into a big kid again. And to be honest, like I just love stuff like that because when I was a kid, I would have loved to have more baseball cards, or I would have loved to have more sneakers, or I would have loved to have sports memorabilia or games or toys or whatever. And so now that I'm an adult, And I have, you know, I'm grateful to have a little bit of, you know, ability to do some fun things. Like, that's what I do now.
That's awesome. Did you collect stuff as a kid?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I collected a lot of stuff.
You, like, so it was very
similar. I could get my hands on. But it was, like, more limited, right? I mean, I always looked forward to back to school time because I'd get a new pair of sneakers. I looked forward to them as if I were collecting them. I looked at them as more than just the utility of a new pair of shoes. I looked forward to getting a new pair of sneakers, like, to add. And I would try to keep the old pair as nice as I could the whole year so that then I would have, like, a rotation of sneakers, which didn't ever really work out very well. But I always wanted that. And now I have this obscene collection of sneakers, which... not obscene compared to, like, true sneakerheads and people out there.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, if my 15-year-old self could, like, see my closet now, they would just be, it would be like, it blow would blow their mind. Like, how would this guy ever be able to do all this, right? And I'm very grateful. Like, I sometimes will just sit and find myself thinking, like, I can't believe how lucky I am that I just get to, like, be a big kid and goof off and do all these things I love. Like, I'm incredibly thankful for that.
What's something that you don't collect now, but you would like to collect?
Oh, that's a good question. What do I not collect that I would like to collect?
And that may be, I mean, it might be putting you too much on the spot, because it's like, it seems with you that, like, you'll start to collect something as you get into it. So if something new came along,
yeah,
I could see you starting to collect and learn everything about it and want to collect.
So I guess without trying to make this podcast all about me, but you asked the question. I'm insanely particular, and I get pretty intense when I, like, get into something. So, for instance, like, my wife and I have gotten into the sneaker hobby sort of together. And you guys have gotten into sneakers, which has been really fun. But I've gone to the point where, like, I know all the names of shoes. And I know, like, Nike doesn't just have red. They call it university red if it looks a certain way. Like, I've gone deep to where, like, now I have this whole well of knowledge about all this stuff. And Ruthie, she can't remember all the different Jordans and, like, what their number distinction is. And I've pretty much got them all memorized for the most part, right? So I go deep. And then, so I think, like, but here's where I'm too neurotic and a little bit goofy to get into certain things. I really wanted to be a person who collected vinyl records, okay? I tried. I started. I got a little record player. It wasn't a super nice one. It wasn't expensive. And I started to collect records. And I would buy some new, and I would go to this, like, record store in Provo, and I would buy some records, right? And that was...
As a kid?
No, this is, like, adult. 5 years ago.
Oh, and this is something new. I don't think
I
knew this.
Don't think we've talked about this. So, and that was fun, but I had this thing in my head that I couldn't let go, which is I would come home and I would be like, why am I going through all this effort when I literally have Spotify right here?
Right.
So there are some things that I want to do, but I can't talk myself into, I can't commit because it, like, the logical part of my brain starts firing and it gets in my way.
Yeah. Starts saying, hey, what are you doing? Let's not go with that.
Yeah, exactly. So I have, you know, I'm a big poker player. You know that I've got a nice set of poker chips that's actually custom designed that I had made for myself, which probably not many people have ever even thought about doing that.
Custom designed that you designed.
That I designed.
Nonetheless.
I've got, you know, stacks and stacks of playing cards because I like playing cards. I don't know, man. I just, these little hobbies that I've had, I just sort of get crazy about them and I have fun with it. So what about you? I mean, turn the table on you. What, I mean, you're not much of a collector from what I know about you, but do you have anything that you would start to call a collection?
So I did for a little bit. I was collecting watches, big faced watches that would, but then I got an Apple Watch and then it's like, well, why do I need all these other fancy watches? Yeah. Like, they were cheap, but it was still something that I was collecting and I'd have a rotation on it. Like you said, and I even had a fancy, Shayla bought me a fancy carrying case for Christmas. Yeah. And, so that's something. I think watches, I could get into that again. I mean, if it's one of those, like, because they're so cheap, the ones that I have, they look nice. But there's no point. I wear this watch, but if I was to start getting, like, fancier watches and moving away from the Apple Watch, it's just hard because, I mean, I use the Apple Watch for the exercising and all that throughout the day. So I just like Apple monitoring me all the time, getting data about
me.
Dude,
I feel like we should talk about that, but maybe in a second after we finish talking about. I was going to ask you about your sneakers, right? So you've gotten into it, and you told me that you have more pairs of shoes now than you've ever had in your whole life.
Yeah.
And
straight up, like, serious. So growing up, it was always just like one pair of shoes a year. Sometimes it was, DI or, Savers. I remember going to Savers and getting pairs of shoes there. And so they weren't fancy, and it was always just a utility thing. You have to wear shoes because you have to have shoes.
Right.
Actually, one of my fondest memories was third grade, and was it Mrs. Robinette? Miss Robinette, her class. Sitting in class, and everybody's like, "Darren, your mom's here." And my mom's tall. Like, she's 6 foot. She was 6 foot in sixth grade. I mean, she's been tall her whole life. And so everybody's like, knew it was my mom. Everybody's like, "Darren, it's your mom." And all, you know how kids get third grade. So I go out there, and she had these nice pair of shoes that were green that she just had bought that she was bringing to me. And it was like, and I put them on, and I just remember feeling so cool. And I remember like the design on the bottom was like this squiggly green. I don't even remember, brand or anything like that. But I just remember being like, oh, yeah, that's super cool. And I felt cool.
That's awesome.
Because it was never about a good, fresh pair of shoes, right? It was always just, get the cheapest ones because they're the cheapest ones.
Yeah.
Type of thing. So, I mean, and then in high school when I had a little bit more autonomy and my mom would give me money for school clothes, or I'd buy, I'd work doing farming and all that during the summer. I got to the point where I bought some like K-Swiss, those are some good K-Swiss. I bought some, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that I've got. I never had any Nikes or Jordans or anything like that. So now, and it was, and you'd probably tell this story better than me, but when you and I bought my first pair of Air Jordans, and they were $90, and it was a struggle for me to buy them. Not that I didn't have the money, or it's not like it wasn't play money that I could spend on whatever I wanted. It was just the fact that I had a pair of shoes at home, and they were enough, and I didn't need more pairs of shoes.
Yep.
And so, well, anyway, one thing led to another, and now I've got like 9 pairs of Jordans and 3 pairs of Air Force Ones.
Yeah, dude.
And I'm sure it will continue to grow.
Yeah.
After I get my vacation paid off.
Well,
that
all hurt. Things in their time, right? And it's like you said, I think that's such a great point, because I still feel that way, for the record. Like, I'm not reliant on these things to like make me happy. Like, it could all just get burned up in a house fire, heaven forbid. And it's like, would I be a little sad? I'm human. So I'd be allowed to be a little sad, but like, my happiness is not contingent on having an unnecessary amount of sneakers. Right. But,
or things.
But at some point, like, I think you have to give yourself, this is me speaking to myself. At some point you have to give yourself freedom to just enjoy things that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Without any guilt. Like, could you always be taking every dollar you make and doing something quote unquote smarter with it? Yes, right, but right. Like, live your mortal life, for heaven's sakes. Like, let yourself have some fun. Let yourself go out to a nice dinner. Let yourself treat yourself to something you like. I mean, gosh, try to enjoy things, man. And just be grateful that you have that bandwidth, if you have that bandwidth.
Please pardon the interruption. Your favorite boys need a pee-pee break, and advertisements help us stack that cheddar. Booyah.
Right. Well, and it's so twofold, right? You got on the one side, I think Dr. Peterson was saying, saving is a contract with the future. or a contract with your future self or something like that, to where it's, you know, and definitely agree with that. And I think that's something that's very important to do. But on the flip side, you know, or just in general thinking about, there's another book I was reading. It's like, you can't solve internal problems with external things. And so to that point is, you can't have, if you're sad, you can't become happy because of external things. I mean, in the short term, you can. You can seem like you're getting happy, but it's not something that is long-lasting or effective.
Well, this is that thing that we've talked about at length, which is like the difference between pleasure and contentment. You might walk into Foot Locker, swipe your credit card, and buy a new pair of Jordans, and that's a pleasure moment, right? You're getting a dopamine hit by discovering the pair on the shelf and choosing them, and they fit perfect, and you buy them, and you hit the credit card, you instant gratification. But you're getting a pleasure hit, but you're not getting contentment. Right. And then when a month later, when the credit card bill comes and you're up to your eyeballs in debt and you're stressed out, now it's like, well, we haven't achieved contentment. So maybe we need to make some decisions that help us get closer to contentment before we go for more pleasure. Right. And I think that it takes everybody a long time to get their head around that concept. You know, like everybody discovers that in their own way. Some people it takes 10 years of adulthood. Some people take 30 years of adulthood. Some people have it figured out in high school.
I feel like too, though, it's like ebbs and flows.
Totally.
I mean, at least from what I've seen from, you know, people, it's like you go, and definitely is true in my own life, where it's like there's like moments of, oh crap, we got to save and we just have to set money aside and we, you know, do all that. And then other times it's like, I don't care, let's just freaking go blow and let's have some fun. And so I think, and which is good, I think, but at the same time, I think it's going back to the thought of making sure that you're really trying to find true peace and true, which is not found in things. And like you said, if things were to disappear overnight or just out of nowhere, that you could be fine and you would be fine.
Yeah.
And you could still be happy.
I love that.
Dude, I feel like we are deeper than deep on a Jeep safari trail.
Well, I feel like now's a great time for your second fact, which I loved and I wanted to leave till we were a little bit deeper in the weeds.
Oh yeah, weeds. Weed eating. So I'll weed eat you with this. So if you want someone to like you, ask them to do you a favor. It might sound backwards, but studies show that if you do someone a favor, that you'll like them more and want to help them again. But that's, and then it's called the Ben Franklin effect. According to legend, Franklin asked an enemy if he could borrow a book and then thanked him profusely. They became lifelong friends.
Wow, that's cool.
I've heard that. I think that's in also in How to Win Friends and Influence People. Mm-hmm. Dale Carnegie talks about how you can, like, going to someone's house and asking them for something is an opportunity, because people are always looking for serving, but, and also at the same time, people are always looking to not like impose on people. Mm-hmm. So perfect example, this weekend, my wife and two daughters are down in Southern Utah and they're playing softball at this summer games. It's a tournament of sorts that has all different types of sports, what have you. And they're down there for softball. And so their softball team decided to go down and enter the tournament like last minute. Mm-hmm. And so when Shayla got on to find a hotel, there was nothing available that was on it, nothing in the middle. It was on the extremes, right? The super expensive, like $300 a night. And it's like, no, you're not doing that. And then the super cheap that was like $45 a night, and it's places you don't want to stay. Yeah. And so, I was like, well, you have an aunt that lives down there. Why don't you reach out to your aunt?
Yeah.
She's like, oh no. And we were with Shayla's dad and he was like, yeah, reach out to her. And then I was like, I guarantee she will love the fact that you're asking to stay at her house. And so she did it. And she was like, yeah, it was freaking awesome. They made everybody breakfast and like, it's just been this huge ordeal. So I think it's, I almost get the sense that everybody, not everybody, that's an overgeneralization, but for the most part, like, people sit there and wait for opportunities to serve people, But when in reality, it's like give someone else the opportunity to serve you, yeah. which I think then will further additional service both ways.
Well, I also too, I think that people have a deep-seated desire to be needed.
Yeah.
People want to feel
totally.
Like they are needed. Like they want to feel,
yep.
it's part of your self-esteem. I think it's literally tied to like how valuable you feel as a person. So maybe,
right.
I mean, who knows? Her aunt's probably giddy as a, you know, she's probably so happy that she was needed, that somebody needed her.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And that she had the opportunity and the means and the home and the availability to just take someone in. Like
right.
she's probably so happy. And we
right.
so often look at it like we're inconveniencing someone.
Right.
But people want to be needed.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a deep thought because it's pride, right? It's pride on our side. Like we don't want to impose,
yeah.
but at the same time, could it be such that we don't want to be seen as weak or be seen as someone that needs something? Like we want, and I know I'm guilty of this. I want to be in a situation always where I am not beholden to anyone.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Even though if it's a bank, I'm okay with, it's weird. I'm okay with a bank, but I'm not with people.
Yeah.
I would rather owe money to, right? So I think it goes back to that, just wanting to make sure that I'm self-sufficient. I don't need anybody's help,
yeah.
which I don't think is the way to live, honestly. I think it's, but I'm always, but the weird thing is I'm always the first one to be like, oh, hey, you need to use my trailer? Go ahead. Oh, you want to ride my four-wheeler with your daughter? Go ahead. Take
yeah.
it. It's fine. Yeah, go ahead. So I.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, you're probably being critical of yourself. You know, I mean, you don't have to have a perfect, you know, mindset all the time about that. I mean, I tend to agree. I think people are, you know, you want to make it on your own, right? I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
a thing that I think people want.
Especially as a man.
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of pride in like, no, I can make it. You know, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably. Mm-hmm. One of the things that makes this true is like just the vulnerability, the same way that like
mm-hmm.
if we're sitting on a park bench and I'm just vulnerable enough to open up to you and have a conversation, if I'm vulnerable enough to ask you for your help, you probably
mm-hmm.
like that about me because it lowers the gate, it lowers the wall.
Oh yeah.
And now you don't see me as somebody who's like perfect or pretentious or someone
right.
who's better than you, or you're not envious of me. Like it knocks down some of that part of the wall and lets you see
right.
that I'm just a person, just like you. And I just
yeah.
need some help. And I was vulnerable enough to ask you for it.
Right. And put myself, yeah, exactly. Put yourself in a situation that, and it can almost be used, you know, strategically to manipulate
oh,
somebody.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's human nature, is to want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be, you know, use that vulnerability and what have you. But no, I totally agree. And that's, I mean, we've talked about this before. I don't know if on the podcast, but just in general of being vulnerable, because, and the more I'm reading that book, that Living Untethered,
yeah.
dude, the more I'm trying to figure out and trying to apply the, just that monk mindset of not caring
yep.
what people, what they're going to say, what their response is. And I can say stuff about, and not 100% open the floodgates, because on the same sense, I think when you 100% open the floodgates, that people don't like that. They'll resent that, or they'll push against that.
Yeah. Well, it can be too much, too fast, or whatever.
Right. Right. Or come across as insincere.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing,
like
you know, you hear about too, like these, like relationships. Like,
sorry. I don't know if you can hear those bells, but Santa Claus is in my house right now.
Santa Claus.
And or my dog is freaking playing with the bells that are hooked to the door, that we were going to train her how to hit those and to go outside, but she has no idea that that's what that means. Sorry. But just want to let you know Santa Claus is here.
It's,
and don't worry.
It's Santa
he's
Claus
to your house.
And his elf.
And his elf.
I was going to say, you know, like, I think that, like, you hear about relationships that are kind of toxic, right? Because one
mm-hmm.
side will be like too nurturing and one side will be too
mm-hmm.
demanding. But what happens
mm-hmm.
is like the demanding side demands a lot of the nurturing side. And because the nurturing side is so nurturing, they just keep nurturing. And, and, but that's like, so yeah, I guess it also is something that you have to kind of like be careful with and make sure that you're not just like over fulfilling someone else's needs at your own expense. Right. I think that's like a generalizing way to say that, you know, in a relationship, if in all relationships, friendships, your marriage, whatever, you have to like protect yourself too, because that can go bitter. That can go bad really fast. Oh, where it's like, I no longer like this person because they asked me for a favor. I resent them because I feel manipulated or I feel forced or coerced into doing something.
Right.
Which is, you know, a whole different thought, but, but I love that. I love that idea.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's, it, somebody else was saying too, that I read it somewhere, that this mom, she was teaching an example of making, it goes back to what you were saying, people want to be wanted or feel like they can serve or that they can help in some way, right? And this story about this mother, she said that she, the story was that the mother would always ask this neighbor that was poor for some sugar or something. And not always, like she, you know, it wasn't like it was a burden on this woman, but would like randomly just ask for it. And the kids were always so confused because they were like, mom, we have sugar, or mom, we have eggs. Like, and she stopped him and she said, look, she doesn't have a lot of money and she, but she, we need to give them, you know, people opportunities to serve us. And I've had that experience in my life where my aunt, she was going through a divorce and, she had a side business along with her main job and she didn't have a lot of money. And it was always like, we just love serving her, helping her with her side job, doing all that. Yeah. And we didn't expect anything in return. We just loved to hang out with her, just loved to be with her, whatever. And she would, and then when she would get money or have money, she would always pay us. And we were always like, no, 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 no. We did it for free. And she's like, she would get mad at us. She'd be like, look, like I, it's constantly coming from you to serve me. I need to serve you back. And this is the way I can do it right now. And the crazy thing was, is every time she had money to pay us was when we needed money. Like it was early on in our marriage and we, you know, have a bill come up or one of these things. And it's like, oh, and you know, we always live by the mantra, like it'll always work out. We don't know how it'll work out. Well, that's by doing good and putting it out there into the world. It always comes back in the time of need. And it did for us. And it, specific to her. So that was, I mean, letting people serve and giving them opportunities to serve, I think is important.
Well, I love that. And I think that that concept transcends whatever label you put on it. Like call it karma, call it a good turn daily, call it whatever, whatever you call it doesn't matter. That's a cosmic truth. That the universe somehow just will help that stuff work out. That's how it works. That's how life works, right? I had a...
You get what you put out.
So my great-grandmother by marriage, so I don't know what that is, like a step-great-grandmother? She went into this kind of assisted living little community, but it was fairly unassisted. You know, they kind of helped you with some things, but, you know, you still had to, like, clean your own apartment, for instance, right? Because she was somewhere on the, like, healthier spectrum. Well, she got a little older and I was having a hard time. And I remember my dad and I went over on a Saturday morning. And because we're both tall, we both grabbed a bucket of soapy water and some rags and we washed her ceilings for her. She asked us to wash her ceilings because she just felt like they were grimy and gross. And I don't think they were gross, to be honest. Like, I don't know how dirty ceilings get, but I don't think her ceilings were very dirty. But it made her feel really good that we did it, right? And my dad and I were happy to do it. So my dad and I just kind of BS'd and talked while we were scrubbing the ceilings. And afterward, she gave me a $5 bill, which was like, for her, she was living on nothing, right? I mean, she got a social security check and like 90% of it went to just this assisted living place. And so she just kind of opened up her wallet. She handed me $5. And in that moment, I had the same thought, which is like, I don't need $5. But she needed me to take the $5 so that the whole, it's the circle of service, it had to be completed, you know?
Right.
And so she's like, no, you will take it. And she handed my dad at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a young married kid. I'm making 35 grand a year or something, like nothing. Right.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Even still, I don't need $5 from my great grandmother.
Right.
And my dad, you know, who knows how much my dad is making at the time, you know, well over $100,000, doing really well for himself. And
yeah.
And he took the $5 too. I was like, thank you. You know, this is great. And,
yeah.
And, you know, that's one thing I've always admired about my dad. My dad's really good at gracefully receiving, you know, a gift or a thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you give him anything, you'll feel very thanked and kind of...
He'll admire it.
Yeah, and really. I think my mom, too. Like, I should throw, because they're going to listen to this, I should throw my mom's great at that, too. I mean, I think they really modeled well for me how to, like, respond to being given something or to...
Well, and that fits perfect because they're both... Well, I don't know both, but your mom, for sure, her love language is giving gifts.
Yeah, exactly.
Or meaningful thought, yeah. Right? Like she sent me a letter and it was, I mean, I was crying. I was full on crying because it was like very meaningful,
yeah.
And heartfelt. And it's like, she had no idea who I was. I mean, other than she knew that I was your friend,
yeah.
Whatever she'd heard on the podcast,
yeah.
And just little things picked up on Facebook. I mean, that was really cool. Really neat.
Yeah. Well, I think it's when you peel back the onion further, you realize that to do anything for any person requires thought, a physical thought about
sacrifice.
That person. Yeah, and time,
right.
And sacrifice or money,
right.
Or whatever it is. So I think the thing,
right.
My mom used to do this fun thing growing up where at Christmas time, there would be kind of an imbalance at Christmas time with who had gotten friend gifts. For instance, right?
Mm.
So like maybe my brother was in third grade and was running with a little group of kids and they all decided to give each other gifts. But let's say at some particular time, like I didn't have very many friends or not many friends brought over a gift to me. Well, my mom,
mm-hmm.
It was really cute actually. She would like, she would go buy gifts and she would label them like to Jordan from a friend. And then she would like put mm-hmm. them under the, you know, she'd put them under the tree or whatever. And so mm-hmm. we had this tradition where I think it was on Christmas Eve, we would open gifts from friends.
Friend gifts.
And
okay.
So, but my mom would always make sure that we all had something to kind of, you know, balance it out. And it was just like, even little thought, but they would be like, you know, even as a teenager, I mean, it would be like a Hot Wheels car. Like it wouldn't be anything
yeah.
like crazy,
yeah.
but it was just cool to be like, it's somebody still thought of me. My mom still went and thought
right.
of me and thought that that would be nice for me to have something. And so I think that that was
right.
a cool thing that was modeled for me is just like, the way to give and receive things and like serve.
Yeah.
I always appreciated that.
Yeah, that was, my mom gave a good example of that as well. It's weird. I don't know if you would say, would you say that I'm an old soul?
Oh yeah.
Like
I would say we both
yeah.
are.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And so I got that from my mom because it was always, my mom had all these friends and they would all, you know, she worked at the care center and talked to the older people. I'd go into the care center and I'd play checkers with people in the care center. And so, you know, she modeled that service of time, of talking to people
yeah.
and really listening and things like that. And then the other thing was is just giving and worried about other people, like my friends that may not have had the money to play in junior jazz.
Yeah.
Like she would pay for their junior jazz.
That's
or,
cool.
You know, certain like things. I think that's... Honestly, that's the best way I think to teach our kids is through example and then just making them aware
yeah.
because a lot of times the kids have no idea those service things that you're doing
yeah.
and to bring them in on it like, oh, hey, guess what? I rallied around in the neighborhood. We got $300 for this lady that lives in this basement. We're going to leave it on our doorstep and knock and run.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, and it gets them involved and excited about serving other people. So
what do you think the definition of, what do you think people mean actually when they say old soul?
Dude, that's, well, when I was asking if you, like, that's where I started questioning, like, what does that even mean? Like, and maybe that's where we need to pull up Google right now. What does it?
Like, I have my idea of what I think it means.
So before I say, read it, my thinking is, honestly, I don't know. Just someone old, like a grandparent that And not necessarily your own grandparent, but a grandparent in general that is just sits there and smiles because they know like what your parents, how they grew up, and then seeing you and doing some of the, either the stupid things that their kids did or, you know, your parents did or, yeah. or, you know, the good things that they did and they see, I would see that as just being aware of people and situations and trying to be, and just being happy about it, finding joy in it. I don't know. That's
yeah. Oh, I think that's a great. I think that's a great. I mean, goes right along with what I would say. My definition is, to me, it's like, like to invent a term that I've never heard used or that doesn't even exist. Like, let's say you're a new soul, right? New soul is like, well, I'm brand new on the block. I've got to like try everything. I've got to hustle. I've got to try every food and all the information. I've got to learn everything. And I've got to, you're like really, really buzzing and you're like high octane, like high energy all the time. I think an old soul is willing to miss out on things or to not indulge in certain things because they just sort of know what they care about and they sort of know what they like and what's important to them. And so there's things that, I don't know, like I'll observe you and you'll just pass on something indulgent or something trendy because it just doesn't simply add value to your life. You know, you're not like a bee buzzing around to every flower. You're like concentrated on things that add value to your life. And you know that about yourself and you feel that way. It's kind of like one of the takes. And I think just conversationally, right? How surface level is your conversation versus how far into your soul are you going to go?
Right. You know? And I agree with that, the depth of conversation, because it's hard and it's difficult for some to get to a level of conversation that is meaningful, that's not just, you know, superficial, high level. Oh, hey, how are you? Good. How are you? Good. Like, perfect example of, and this goes back to, I told you I started my little notebook about my book for communication that I'm writing. So I started writing in it. One of the stories, when it comes to communication, I remember the first time riding in the elevator with the CEO of Questar when I worked there as an intern. And so me, first time in the corporate world, and I'm just like, I was on the elevator, he steps on, it's just him, and I'm like, holy crap, you know, starstruck. This is the CEO of the company, you know, $16 billion company. I don't know what it was at the time, but, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this, you know, this is so cool. So then he's holding in his hand, he's holding this Diet Dr. Pepper. And so I said to him, like, oh, your wife's got you drinking those too, huh? And it instantly like took it to a conversation level where it was like, cause at first I'm like, I don't even want to talk to them. But then I saw him in the can. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to try to be funny. And it totally turned into a situation of just full on conversation and talking about Diet Dr. Pepper. And then after that, I was like, I don't know why I'm holding this guy on such a high pedestal. He puts his pants on the same way I put my pants on. You know, he's a human being. Yeah. He's just a guy, you know, that's in, got himself in a situation.
Well, so, you know what's funny too? Is that guy might need a new friend more than someone else, right?
Yeah.
Like, think about the stressful life that dude probably lives. And think about, like, how serious his day-to-day is. Like, it probably made his day as much as it made yours to just, like, have a new friend for a moment, you know?
And have somebody that didn't what's the word? Like, just wasn't a yes man that just sat there quietly.
Yeah, you had no objective. Didn't say a word. You had no. Weren't.
There
you
was
weren't,
nothing.
You weren't campaigning for anything. You were just talking, right?
Right.
I found this.
And my dog is chasing her foot.
11 characteristics of an old soul. And it.
Oh, you found it. And let me give the definition before you start going through it. So the definition on dictionary.com is a person, especially a child or a young person who demonstrates a maturity, understanding, or seriousness that is typical of someone much older.
Yeah.
Which I can agree. I can get there with that. So what were the some things listed? Well, I think
that the points that you and I make kind of fold under that, right? I think that.
Right.
So one is you have an inquisitive, curious mind. You see the big picture. Mm-hmm. You may feel like an outsider. You recognize fellow old souls when you meet them quickly. You feel deep.
That's true, dude. Yeah,
totally. You feel deeply connected to everything. You go against the status quo. You're wise beyond your years. You're not materialistic. Your inner world is more important than the outer. You have a particular gift from the past, like a talent, it sounds like. Or you often need to recharge. It's funny. Like, I don't know. Hopefully people don't think we're arrogant, assuming that we're old souls. But, like, I read all these characteristics, and it feels very like I'm just, like, I'm describing how I feel, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's cool. Maybe... I'm sure there's downsides to being an old soul. We're missing out on some stuff, I'm sure, but
yeah, we're. I mean, I'm getting FOMO right now.
All these,
I feel like I need to do something.
All these kids out there ticker talking her in and then Snapchatting, and what are we doing? We're just
Facebooking
on everything, just rubbing their face on everything.
Yeah, yeah, which is weird.
Pretty weird, but
I mean, but okay.
As long as you're not,
it's cool.
Picking your friend's nose, because that's kind of like our thing is to try to avoid that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, we don't want to do
that. What does that mean to you today? I was going to ask you, because like we named this podcast, You Can't Pick Your Friend's Nose. And there was like a lot of energy behind that. What does that mean to you right now, like on the spot?
Honestly, it just a deeper meaning, especially over time. I mean, even then, like the meaning of it, the fact that you shouldn't be up on your friend's business, right? I mean, you should. I think knowing where to draw a line as it relates to your friends. Mm-hmm. But even still, like over the past 2 years and working in the nonprofit organization that I've been working in, well, not work, but serving in the church.
Yeah.
Just working with people, it's twofold. Like it makes you not want to work with people.
Yeah.
Working with people makes you not want to work with people. But then at the same time, it like, you see where people don't know how to set boundaries and then don't know how to abide by boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so I think I think if somebody was to think about it and just sit and consider like, what does that mean? Like, yeah, it's funny. You can't pick your friends, your nose, but like, what does that mean? Like the effect of something so intimate as picking your nose, like, you should really consider before just butting in and doing it for somebody else and thinking you know how to pick it better than they do.
Right. No, that's awesome. Like that's, I totally agree. I still love it as this kind of sort of abstract parallel for relationships or something.
Yeah. Communication, anything. Honestly, every interaction you have with anybody, even yourself is related back to, you can't pick your friend's nose. Yeah. Like you should know when to, like set boundaries for yourself or for your spouse or setting boundaries for your kids or, I mean,
well,
there's always opportunity.
I think one thing that resonated always with me about the idea too was almost like maybe from like a political standpoint, like you can choose and who you're going to spend time with and kind of where you put yourself, but you can't force all those people to like think the same way you think. And you can't just insert your finger up their nose and say, this is the way it is. Because all those people have their own lives and their own thoughts and their own beliefs, and you can't just like whip everybody around and put them where you want them.
And I think that's what gives certain organizations a bad name, especially religious organizations and political organizations, is because everybody's trying to force everybody to align with their construct and without taking into consideration. And then also the groupthink, right? So if you don't align with us, then you're against us.
Right.
And then you don't want to feel like you're an outsider.
Right.
And so that's, and maybe that goes back to being an old soul, but that's, to me, is stupid. And I don't, like, that bothers me.
Just be you and let everybody be them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's cool to be light, you know, have likenesses, have things that are similar. I mean, you're going to have that, but you can't make everybody conform.
Well, one of the reasons we became fast friends is you're one of the least judgmental people I think I've ever met. And that was was the only way we got so off so quick. What's one of the ways we got off so quick? But but maybe as an old soul, I'm also a little bit guarded. You know, I try to look for that opportunity where I really see somebody being true and genuine with me. And I think that's why people people like you, you know, they like you as a friend because you're that way. So,
well, and there's only one other time that I've made a connection like with you was one other friend, and we actually don't talk that often, but he, yeah, it was one of those, I could tell he was a genuine person. Yeah. And so we were instant friends. Yeah. Like you can't, and that's what I think, going back to what we were saying, is like, if you'll just let your guard down and be vulnerable and not be so serious about everything, you can find common ground, things that you can build a relationship on pretty quickly. Like,
totally.
I'm ready to, I mean, take my truck. Like I'm that type of person that if like I met you within the first hour and I could tell that you were an old soul, I would let you take my truck. Yeah. And I'd let you take whatever. Yeah. So anyway, I feel like this has been an episode of gooiness of, I don't know what it is, but well, it's been fun.
It has been fun. You got anything else or should we bring it home?
Let's bring it home so the people don't fall asleep at the 50-minute mark.
The 50-minute mark, we made it. Well, we end it the same way, and we just say that, look, you can pick your friends, and you can pick your nose.
But you can't pick your friend's nose.
There you go. There you have it.
There it is. Write it down. Tweet it.
We said it. And we said it first, and don't let anyone tell you that they said it before us, okay?
Yeah. Triple stamp, a double stamp. You can't do it.
Triple stamp, a double stamp.
Do that.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Later. When it hits you, yes, 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 you shine. When it hits you, yes.